Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mike Chen, let's go! For the program, so glad that you are hanging out. Man, it has been an incredible night of guests with Will Perdue in here. Scoop B was in here. We have talked a ton of basketball over the last 2 hours. We're going to talk more basketball in a little bit. There was a great interview with Michael Reinsdorf that I want to share with you before I get out of here. But I also want to get back to talking a little bit of football, too, with the Bears with a big game on Sunday. Them taking on the Patriots. Evan Silva was supposed to join us. We were going to do fantasy with him, but he had something come up. So we'll have to reschedule. Shout out to Evan. I still love him. But, you know, things come up and we play on. That's okay. We still have a lot of content ready for you on this show. So I wanted to go back to talking about the Bears versus the Patriots. In the first hour of the show, I talked about how Bill Belichick on the conference call was just gushing is not the right word, because that would be inflammatory if I said that, but he was very complimentary of the Bears and obviously very knowledgeable, and he was sharing some of the stuff that he likes about what he sees with the Bears. He was talking about Mitchell Trubisky and the ball placement, which if you were listening to this show, you heard me talking about his ball placement against man defenses. Was amazing last week against the Dolphins. And hopefully he's going to continue to be able to put the ball in places where his guys can make the play, or the ball goes out of bounds or is incomplete and not picked off. The throw, the one that didn't get picked, that almost got picked late in the game, that was questionable. But I still thought that his performance against a defense that was actually trying was better than the performance where he went crazy. Can I just ask this question? Should we eliminate the shovel pass from passing touchdowns? It almost feels like cheating. Like I get it that it's a forward pass. But it almost feels like that's a cheap way for a quarterback to add to their touchdown total. Maybe I'm off on that, but it just seems that way to me.
No, I think you're right. I mean, the whole idea behind it is if they miss that ball, it's an incomplete pass, right?
Which is great.
Exactly. So it's such a favorable play for the offense. Why wouldn't they run it? But actually giving them touchdowns for it, I mean, it has to account for it, but it seems wrong giving a passing touchdown for that.
It feels wrong, even though it's been very, very right. 312 Texas says, have you seen the Boston Globe, Aaron Hernandez, and Bill Belichick stuff? I've seen some of it. I was listening to Lebatard, and he was reading. I was listening to his podcast yesterday when I was leaving school, and I want to dive into that before I can give you an opinion on it. Like, I'd like to listen to the podcast and read the work. I just haven't had the time. But from what the author of the piece said, it is fascinating. Like, the life and times of Aaron Hernandez leading up to him going down to Florida. Really scary and fascinating stuff at the exact same time. So just thought I would share. All right. Anthony Heron was on the show last night. Earlier, you heard Anthony talking about Trubisky specifically. In this portion of the conversation that we had, I wanted to use it to talk about Bears versus Patriots. So if you were wondering how it breaks down, Anthony and I went through it with a fine-tooth comb. So here's your preview of Bears-Patriots.
Obviously, the best recipe is if their pass rush looks like it did through the first four games of the season, more so than it did this last game in Miami. Now, and I don't know, maybe you've seen a more recent update. Has there been anything more definitive on Khalil Mack's ankle that you've seen?
Just more testing,
yeah,
which makes me nervous.
Right. And to me, the way that Mack was used throughout the second half and in overtime the other day, where not only was he very ineffective as a pass rusher, but it got to the point where the Bears basically turned Leonard Floyd into the more featured edge rusher, and Khalil Mack was the one spending more time dropping in coverage and chipping on inside slot receivers and things like that. So, you know, you would think, my guess would be that part of that was just them recognizing, not just resting him, but recognizing that, yeah, his ankle is gimpy right now. He's not that effective at this point as far as getting after the quarterback. And Leonard Floyd, to me, actually, and one of the texters even asked about Roquan Smith, in defeat, to me, it was the best game that both Roquan Smith and Leonard Floyd have had this season. I thought Leonard Floyd was very active, even in the snaps where he wasn't trying to DDT tiny wide receivers, but it was his most active game of the year, even in rushing the quarterback and picking up phantom penalties. So while he certainly wasn't Khalil Mack, he played his best game of the year, and I thought Roquan Smith did as well with his willingness to approach the line of scrimmage with more urgency in the run game and meet blockers and meet running backs. So all that being said, to the question you asked me about trying to contain the Patriots offense, best case scenario is from all four angles with your down defensive line, you're getting some pass rush. But I'll operate under the thought that maybe Khalil Mack is still going to be somewhat limited physically and that Leonard Floyd will not, you know, suddenly turn into Khalil Mack. So let's say that they're not necessarily getting the edge pressure they're looking for. Still on the interior, because of Tom Brady being a vertical escape quarterback, whereas some quarterbacks tend to escape either vertically or horizontally, like Mitchell Trubisky is more of a
horizontal.
Yes, he's a lateral escape guy. Lateral escape guy, Russell Wilson, right. Tom Brady's going to climb the pocket when pressure's coming at him. So the thing that's most effective, and, you know, we think back to the Super Bowls where, you know, Michael Strahan had great games and everything, but it was because of the interior pressure that the Giants put on him in the Super Bowl, or that, you know, the Jaguars can put on him when they face Jacksonville. It's interior pressure against Tom Brady that is the most effective because of where he likes to escape. He likes to climb the pocket while keeping his eyes down the field. After he climbs, he may try to extend the play a bit, moving laterally from that point. So Akeem Hicks having a big night, that is the most vital thing. Even if Khalil Mack is healthy, because of, you know, schematically what the Patriots are likely going to be able to do, whether it's using Gronk, Sony Michel, with their offensive tackles and just giving Brady an extra beat to get what's likely to be more of a quick passing game, you can try to neutralize the edge in a wider variety of ways than you can the interior pass rush. So I anticipate seeing, and you know, Sony Michel has played really well lately, so I don't think we're going to see the majority of the snaps defensively being sub, but when they can put New England in some more predictable passing scenarios, when sub is on the field, it needs to be Akeem Hicks and Roy Robertson-Harris. It needs to be guys who penetrate with more effectiveness than what you get from maybe an Eddie Goldman, Jonathan Bullard, you know, some of the guys who maybe get out of their stance well, but aren't as crafty as getting skinny in gaps, because you want pressure immediately in the face of Tom Brady. That gets him back on his haunches that much more and makes that, even the quick passing game, more difficult to try and execute for him.
What things scare you about the Patriots offense that are not named Tom Brady?
Sony Michel, and he's a back.
He runs so hard.
He runs really hard, and he's got the all-purpose skill set to him as well. Like, even when he and Nick Chubb both went to Georgia at the same time, like they were both in the Army All-American Bowl that I've been calling for NBC for years. And so I've been watching Sony Michel and Nick Chubb and all these other great backs that Georgia always seems to have since he was back in high school. He's just always been an injury-plagued guy. But as soon as he got drafted by New England. I said, all right, that guy's going to have a shot at making some Pro Bowls, because as long as he's healthy, he's got the full array of skills to him. I mean, at some point, if Lewis leaves New England, and Sony Michel can be that receiver out of the backfield too. He's got that type of game to him. Right now, he's mainly kind of their downhill thumper, but like Zeke Elliott, where he's got thump to him, but he's also got the route running skills, and he's got the soft hands more so than you would see from a lot of other running backs. So I'd say out of anyone, when you're going past just the names on the marquee like Brady and Gronkowski, the nation is starting to get a little bit more of a sense for who Sony Michel can be in the National Football League. And he's a weapon I think New England is going to start to unleash more and more now that he's really – and it's a complex offense they run in New England. So they seem to usually, with younger players, kind of just piecemeal them into certain roles here and there. But Sony Michel's been warming up for New England here lately. And he's the type of player that can put Roquan Smith and Daniel Trevathan in binds because of how he can be utilized. It won't only be sort of, you know, slot receivers that Roquan's going to have to worry about. You know, that's not a position the Bears are looking to put him in, but there's going to be times where he's going to have to match up with the backs. And Sony Michel is very, very effective with his skills to be able to come out of the backfield and route people up.
How confident are you that if it comes down to it, Mitch and the offense can do what Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs did to run with the Patriots if it turns into that type of game?
I'm not extremely confident. I want to see more of the Bears offense being able to operate at a high level. I'm feeling better about it. I'm not there yet, because, you know, this will be to me just another, and even though it's not going to be, you know, one of the games in the national window, Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football or anything like that, but it's the Patriots. And so with New England coming to Chicago, and it's Mitchell Trubisky looking across the sideline and seeing Tom Brady and Bill Belichick over there, and it's him spending the entire week preparing for, and it's not that New England's defense has been stellar throughout the season, but you know that Belichick will usually have some sort of a trick up his sleeve, especially like you referenced earlier, for younger quarterbacks. So this to me will be another hurdle, just like facing Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay on opening night was a hurdle for him, just in what the perception is of him as the face of the Bears and their franchise future star and all that, matching up against one of the faces of the National Football League. This will be another opportunity for him to prove his worth against a team with Tom Brady, with the GOAT as the quarterback of the opposition. So for him, I want to see if he can respond to that. I've liked what I've seen throughout the last couple of games. I'm a tangible evidence guy. And to me, one thing that I want to pay attention to as well is Matt Nagy as a play caller, because I feel like there's so many times where, because he and Mark Helfrich put a lot of cool stuff together during the week, and it's almost like he wants to get all of it in every game, as opposed to just saying every once in a while, I'm going to just call something more basic and trust my playmakers to make a play. Trust my offensive line to move somebody. Trust Jordan Howard on the inside zone just to defeat a blocker and get the yardage we need. Some of those things that he started to do during the second half and overtime, I'd like to see more of that, as opposed to, you know, every time Kevin White comes on the field, it's because he's going to be lead blocking for somebody on some outside play.
You picked up that tendency too, huh?
Yeah, it's like you know they're not throwing him the ball. He's in there to basically be Orlando Pace outside the numbers at this point.
Great stuff from Anthony Heron. I love talking football with him. And for the foreseeable future, I think I looked on the schedule, the next four Tuesdays, Anthony's going to come in and do an hour with me. It looks like we survived the play-by-play window on Tuesday nights for the next month so that we can get Anthony and that giant brain of his in here to discuss football. Because I love listening to him talk, but I really love listening to him talk football. So we're going to do that every Tuesday with him. Glad that he's part of the team and that you're hearing more and more, whether it's on my show or if you're hearing him on with Bernstein and McKnight. It's just great to have Anthony around. We're going to take a break. Another piece of score stuff that was tremendous. This time, not from my show, from the morning show. People always wonder about the leadership of the Bulls. People always wonder, well, who's really running the Bulls? Michael Reinsdorf was on the Score this morning. This interview is going to blow you away. It's next on the Score. Top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. With 3 first-round and 3 second-round draft choices, the Chicago Wolves are positioned to be the last team standing. The Wolves host arch-rival Milwaukee Sunday at 3 at Allstate Arena. First 1,000 fans receive a free GameWorks gift card. You may have heard during the commercial break, the rumors are true. The pregame show that I do with Alex Brown, Matt Forte, and Lance Briggs, we are going to be at the Xfinity store in Hyde Park. And you know who's happy about that? Your boy. Because that is the home game of home games for me. So the Xfinity store on 53rd Street, I'll be there. I'm the least important thing that will be there. Alex will be there. Lance will be there. Matt Forte will be there. They're going to take pictures. It's going to be fun. And I will tell you, they don't know. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I can tell you I have a pretty dope surprise for them Sunday morning. That's all I can say because I don't want to give it away. But you should come out. If you're in Hyde Park or Kenwood or Woodlawn or anywhere, Englewood, anywhere on the south side, take Lakeshore Drive south, get off 53rd, head up a couple blocks. We'll be at the Xfinity store. It's going to be so fun. I'm just telling you. And I got a big surprise that I also think that you will think is fun. Before I get to the Michael Reinsdorf interview, if you're caller 6 to the Scores contest line, which is 312-591-6700, you're going to win a $35 gift card to Top Golf in Wooddale. Julie keeps saying that we should do like a night out at Top Golf. I think she's right. Join the Score and Dos Equis at Top Golf in Wooddale Saturday night from 7 until 9 for a college football watch party. So caller 6 will get that $35 gift card to Top Golf, and we thank them for sponsoring us. Earlier this morning, Michael Reinsdorf, who is one of the owners of the Bulls and is the person who is in front when it comes to the Bulls, was on the Score with Mully and Hall. The interview was really terrific. It's not often that you hear from ownership, so it was nice to have him on. And I think that you will be encouraged and excited about the direction from what Michael had to say. So I want you to take a listen to it, and you let me know as it's going on. You can text me at 67011. Mully and Hall did a great interview with Michael Reinsdorf, and they started off talking to him about coming back from a 55-loss season.
It's not just 55 losses. The White Sox lost a lot of games, too. So there were a lot of losses last year, and it's hard. It's incredibly hard. I'm so competitive, and, when you can control things, that's one thing. But when you can't necessarily control everything that's going on the court or in sports as a fan or whoever, it can be frustrating. So no one likes to sit there and lose 55 games. But, you know, we felt like we needed to take a step backwards before we could take the proverbial, you know, 3 steps forward.
Are you in a position this year, entering this season, which starts tomorrow night against the 76ers, to say that the making the playoffs is a realistic goal?
You can look at the teams, and you pretty much know who the top 6 or 7 teams are probably going to be, and then there's going to be that 8th spot that everyone seems to fight for. Is it realistic? I don't know if I can put that expectation out there. What I can do is, you can look at how does the team progress and where is the development coming from. I think that's the most important thing. All the different storylines that are going on with this team. And is Zach LaVine going to step up and become the player we think he is? And what kind of development are we going to see out of Lowry? I saw him the other day, yesterday, and just looking at how big he's gotten, it's just amazing. And so I'm excited for when he comes back. And Wendell Carter is a player that I think surprised us. We knew that we were excited when we drafted him, but I think seeing what he did in the summer league and in the preseason so far, there's just so many things to look at when you're watching this team. So the most important for me is going to be the development of the core of the young players, just not just individually, but also collectively as a group. How do they work from a chemistry standpoint? So that's going to be really interesting.
He's Michael Reinsdorf. He is, of course, the Bulls president and chief operating officer, and you're listening to Mullion Hall on The Score. And Michael, I grew up a Sox fan like you, and loyalty
person
is
in that. Huh? There's at least one smart person we're talking to.
That's exactly right. Loyalty's been a calling card of your father for forever, and as a Sox fan, I always got a kick out of, you know, seeing Ozzy as a player and then as a manager, and Kenny and all those guys. You have a history with those guys. I feel the same way. You know, I had the good fortune to be a Bulls beat writer for the Sun-Times, and I covered PAX as a player, and I got to know him as a guy, and he's a great guy. I look at the job that John Paxson and Gar Forman are doing, and I see the loyalty and the faith that you have in them. I, however, do sports radio, and I hear from a lot of people that don't share that. Can you tell us how far your loyalty goes and why you feel that way about these guys?
It's always nice when people say someone's loyal and everything. I actually don't look at myself. I don't necessarily look at my dad as being necessarily loyal. I think if we feel like we have the right people doing the jobs that we've hired them to do, that, you know, then that's what matters the most. And so I understand the ultimate goal when you're involved in sports or as your fan is you want your team to win a championship, and that's ultimately what we want to do. It's been a while since we've been there, since Jordan Michael retired and the dynasty ended, but from my perspective, I think that John Paxson and Gar Forman have done a very, very good job, and there's been a lot of situations that have occurred. There's a lot of luck that's involved. You know, I was reading an article yesterday that Steve Kerr was quoted in and talked about how lucky they were to draft Draymond Green. We were lucky when we won the number one pick and we drafted Derrick Rose, but we were just as unlucky when we extended his contract and then he blew out his knee, and then we were kind of stuck in salary cap hell, as you would say, where, you know, you lose a lot of your flexibility. But I look at their drafts over the years and their trades, and of course you're never going to hit it right all the time, especially if you're drafting later in the first round. And the key is you don't want to make too many mistakes in when you're drafting early, and that's happened too. But overall, if you look at our draft record over the years, whether you're drafting Jimmy Butler at 30, Taj Gibson at 26, Bobby Portis at 22. You know, Lauri Markkanen, you know, if they did the draft over again, you can be sure that he would not be available with the seventh pick. So you're going to make mistakes. Look at Jerry West, who's one of the great general managers of all time, and you'll look at his draft record, and you'll see some guys, you're kind of head scratchers, like, what was he thinking? So it takes a lot of luck. It takes a lot of skill. You got to put it all together, and hopefully you get there. But I thought they did a great job when we made the decision to let's rebuild this thing. We were kind of stuck as a kind of a seventh or eighth seeded team. We knew that's where we were going to be for a couple of years, and then we were going to face big decisions. And we wanted to jumpstart the rebuild, and I think they did as good of a job as anyone out there in bringing in three quality players for Jimmy Butler. So I really wouldn't call it loyalty. I just think that they're doing a good job, and it's not necessarily what the fans always want to hear, and I get it, but it's what we really believe in.
Michael, you mentioned Jerry West, and I enjoyed your interview with Casey Johnson in the Tribune yesterday, and you told a story about how Jerry West said to you about Gar and Pax, said, I like where you guys are as an organization and what John and Gar are doing. And it's interesting to me because there seems to be a disparity. You talk to people around the league, and I'm sure as you do, and there is that perception that these guys are doing it the right way, as you just described. And locally, they're very polarizing. How do you reconcile that difference, and how frustrating, if it is frustrating at all to you, to kind of, you know, hear the noise that accompanies every season?
Well, first of all, when I talked to Jerry West, those are the things that just are so exciting. I was flying home on United Airlines, and he was sitting behind me, and I got up and I introduced myself, and he knows my dad pretty well, and you know, Jerry just will start talking. I mean, he's mm-hmm. And to hear him just spend an hour, you know, just standing in the aisle talking to him about basketball is an incredible thrill. But is it hard? I mean, it's probably harder for John and Garwin when they read negative stuff about them. But I really like those guys, and I do feel bad at times when we're struggling, and you know, everyone, a lot of the fans are clamoring for us to move in a different direction. But it's kind of the greatness of sports. If people didn't care, then they wouldn't be coming to the games. They wouldn't be tuning us in. So it's the nature of sport. You're going to have people who, you know, debate, and people who think that, you know, we know what we're doing, and there are going to be people who think that we don't know what we're doing. And it's not the fans' job to love management, by the way. They love the players. They love the sport. But it's not their job to love ownership and the management side of the business.
That's a very interesting point you make there. I just want to talk to you about, there's an old myth around the Bulls, really since the Jordan era, maybe the shadow of Michael, I don't know. But for whatever reason, there's this myth out there, and maybe it's not a myth, that free agents don't want to come to Chicago, that it's not a destination for NBA players. You buy that?
I do think early on there was some truth to that. You know, right when Michael retired, I think there were players that they didn't know if they could step into that role. And I'm not going to name the players, but you know, you can go back and look and figure out who it is. I don't think that exists anymore. It's been too long. I think most people, when they're talking to us, whether it's young players, you know, when they're talking to, we had dinner with some with Zach and Chris Dunn and Larry, you know, a year ago when we brought them in, and all they want to do was talk to John Paxson about Michael. So I think today's players, that's not an issue. I don't think we have any trouble attracting free agents. I just think it depends on the scenario and what's going on in that particular year. We know our history. We know how close we came to landing some incredibly big fish years ago. But I'm not a fisherman, by the way. But players want to be where they feel like they can win and they have a good platform. And Chicago offers so much. I mean, it's an unbelievable sports town. I mean, look at the support the teams have received over the years. We've led the league in attendance for many years. Have been near the top. When the team is going well, the place is incredibly loud. You look at what the Blackhawks have done. I mean, it's a great sports town. I think there's plenty of players that want to play here. It's just got to be the right situation. You got to time it right. You got to have an up and coming team, and then you're going to have the right free agent to plug in there. It's the timing has a lot to do with it.
Michael, Fred Hoiberg's first year, I think it was a mismatched roster. It didn't really fit his offensive system. Second year, sort of the Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade season, they kind of hijacked that year. Last year was, you know, losing by design. Fourth year of a fifth-year deal, a five-year deal for Fred Hoiberg. I think this is going to be a truer sense of what he is as a head coach, maybe a referendum on his ability to coach this team. How are you viewing it from your seat, and how much pressure is there on Fred to produce some really evidence of coaching this year?
I hope he doesn't feel like there's a lot of pressure. I mean, there's pressure in sports, but at the end of the day, it still is just sports. There's pressures that we deal with every day in life that are way more important. But you're right. I think that the first year Fred stepped in, and that was a tough, tough situation to be put in when you have a veteran team on the decline and a team that we probably should have kind of gone a different direction with earlier. And then the second year when we brought Dwayne in, I mean, they competed and they made the playoffs. And, you know, without the injury to Rondo, I think we beat Boston. I mean, we went up 2-0 against them in the first round. But it still wasn't a team that was built to win long-term. So I thought last year he did a nice job. I thought it's nice when everyone's kind of growing together. Everyone's on the same page. You have a young coach, you have young players, and everyone's trying to pull – everyone's pulling the same direction. So this year, the most important – thing from my perspective is again, as I alluded to earlier, is where's all the development coming from? We need to see a lot of good things from a lot of different players. So hopefully he doesn't feel the pressure on the wins and losses. And that's one thing we've tried to communicate to him, that's not how you're judged. You're judged about in terms of the development of the player. So I think we're in good position. I think Fred's in good position to succeed.
Michael, we really appreciate your time and your candor. It was a lot of fun catching up with you. Just before you go, just curious, how's your dad reacting to all the rebuilding? It's kind of amazing that you got two rebuilds going.
He, he's excited, but it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. He wants to win. He wants to create something special. It's hard, but he knows it's the right decision. And he doesn't make decisions based on how, you know, from a selfish standpoint. He makes decisions based on long term. And so he wants to make sure that both organizations are put in the right position from a long term perspective.
Thank you, Michael.
Great, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Good stuff.
That's great. Yeah. Michael Reinsdorf, the Bulls president.
I thought that was great. From a journalistic standpoint, whether it was Mully and Hanley back in the day or now Mully and Hall, I enjoy how those guys conduct interviews. I like the way they ask questions. They ask important questions to powerful people. And it's good. Like, there's, in some cases, like, you have a guy like Michael Reinsdorf on, very powerful guy. Some of those questions become hard for people to ask. But I thought that in this particular interview, David and Mully asked a lot of questions that Bulls fans had. Like, why are you so loyal? This rebuild's been going on for a long time. This is year four for Fred. What do you think of the job that Fred's doing? I thought it was really well done. I also thought that they're, I don't want to talk so much about the White Sox, but for the Bulls, there's, hearing Michael talk about it, there's a sliver of hope. And honestly, that's all that sports fans ask for initially, is there be a little bit of hope surrounding whatever it is that you're going to do. So I thought that was well done. I thought that Michael came off well. I thought that that was probably the best light that the Bulls as an organization have been painted in a long time. And you know me, I enjoy listening to Pax, even though I disagree with him a lot. I think that he does a good job being the front man for the Bulls. I never want to hear from Gar, ever. But if Michael Reinsdorf wants to pop on the score once or twice a year, I'm down for that. Because I felt like there was some clarity in message. There was some transparency in what's going on with this franchise from the macro to the micro. And it just, as a Bulls fan, it made me feel optimistic. I don't know if any of that's true. You know, you've heard me for the last couple of days. I've been like, I'm low-key excited for the Bulls season to start, and it'll start tomorrow night. I'll be leading you up to the game tomorrow night. I'm low-key excited about it. But to hear Michael Reinsdorf today, I just thought was, I think is what Bulls fans needed at this juncture, wherever they are in their development. And we'll see what ends up happening. But it was nice to have him on the score, and I thought the guys did a great job with the interview. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, Julie DeCaro is going to join me. And we're going to talk about things, I guess, and stuff, and people. It's next here on The Score. Bottom of the hour was brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. With a first, with three first round and three second round draft choices, the Chicago Wolves are positioned to be the last team standing. The Wolves host arch rival Milwaukee Admirals Sunday at 3 at Allstate Arena. First 1,000 fans receive a free GameWorks gift card. Julie DeCaro is here in the house. Jules, tonight I gave away two $35 gift cards to Topgolf.
Oh, yeah. We still haven't done that.
I was saying how you said that we should do like a night out where we all like go play Topgolf.
We absolutely should. It is my family's Christmas Eve tradition now.
So the 23rd, you guys head over there?
Yeah, so my brother is back in town from the West Coast. We go over to Topgolf in Naperville. They have heaters outside, so you're sitting on like a couch with your coat with no coat on, hitting off into the snow. while eating sliders and like watching the Blackhawks. It's great fun.
Yeah, I'm down with that. That's yeah. Are you any good at golf?
No. I can hit it. I either hit it a mile and people are like super impressed, or I miss the ball entirely.
Okay.
There's no in between. And I don't really have the temperament for it. I tend to throw clubs and get really frustrated.
That's why I stopped playing.
Yeah.
Like it's a game that you can't win. You know, you're kind of perpetually trying to perfect and conquer the game. And I'm like you, like there is less satisfaction for me in playing it. So I would get really frustrated.
Yeah. And I also feel like the thing about golf is I would imagine that a lot of us that come into this like career path were athletes and played sports growing up. And most of us probably, you know, if you're a natural athlete, things are generally pretty easy for you to pick up. But golf is not that way. You can be a super athlete and just be terrible at golf. I just feel like it doesn't translate. And like my mother-in-law, who's like in her 70s, is like a great golfer.
She hits the ball well.
Yeah, and I don't think she ever played any other sport like in her life.
Good for her.
There just seems to be no rhyme or reason to like who's good at it and who's not.
So how'd you guys figure out that like Topgolf was the place to hang out? Like how does that happen if you're not a golfer?
Well,
and I mean, I get it. Like that's what they're saying. Like you don't have to be a golfer. Come here and hang out and mess around with golf a little bit.
Well, it's fun because it's like playing ping pong. I'm like playing like a pinball, right? Because you hit it into the circle and it lights up. And so it's just a driving range. It's not like real golf. I don't know. I mean, my brother's a really good golfer. My husband grew up golfing. Like, you know, he lives in this town in Minnesota where like everybody golfs. That's all they do in the summer is golf. So I don't know how we picked it, how we wound up going there. But it's, you know, you can go there and not golf and have fun. You can just hang out with your friends.
I agree, and I'm looking forward to when we do this.
Yeah, we should do it.
Because I think it'd be fun. I'm just trying to size up all the guys on the staff that we would invite. And I'm trying to think who's like sneaky good at golf.
Do we want good people?
See, because like Mike is probably the best athlete.
Yeah.
Do you golf?
Not very well.
You liar. Did you see him?
I'm not very good.
Did you see him do that ringer thing? I'm not any good.
Every once in a while, I'll like hit a clean shot, but the majority of them, I slice most everything I hit. It's the wrist thing. I mean, you know, Lawrence, when you play baseball, you turn your wrist to hit. In golf, if you're moving your wrists, the ball's going everywhere. So I have some issues with that.
I have three levels of golf. I have over the top of the ball where I don't hit anything. I hit it square and it goes really far and people are impressed. Or I try to hit it and not whiff and I hit it into the ground really hard and then it hurts my shoulder and my wrist and everything else.
Okay. That is,
all my swings are one of those three things.
I don't live very far from, on 63rd, there's a driving range, Jackson Park. I don't live very far from it. And Hood and I would go. And this is when I knew I had a problem. So Jonathan and I would go and hit buckets of balls. And Jonathan would just go to go. Like let's go hit balls. And I would be like, okay, let's go hit balls. And then we'd hit a bucket. And Jonathan would be like, ready to go? And I'm like, I'm going to hit this last ball. And I wouldn't hit the last ball perfectly. And I'm like, now we're going to get another bucket. And he's like, what are you talking about? We need to hit another bucket of balls. And this would go on. Where if I didn't feel like I got the best of the bucket, and particularly the last shot of the bucket, there needed to be another bucket.
See, everyone always talks about, you know, you'll hit that one shot that'll keep you coming back. That never happens to me. I just get really frustrated. And
I get
don't
mad that I
anymore.
Can't hit every shot like that. And I feel like that makes you a terrible golfer.
I just get mad that it's hard for me. Like, I want it to be as easy for me as like soccer or volleyball was. And I just hate the fact that it's hard for me. I hate it.
Yeah.
I don't want to struggle anymore in life.
Maybe I should go out with Rosner, but I feel like Rosner probably takes golf so seriously. But how could it not be fun if it's Barry? Like, that's the other thing. If
I think it cannot be fun.
Because he's going to get super serious.
Yes.
He does love the game. It takes more time and patience than I have to enjoy golf. And my whole thing is people are like, oh, you know, it's great. You're outside. It's like, I could just take a walk. Like, I don't need to bring the clubs.
But that's what's great about Topgolf because it's like a pub where you walk out to the, you walk, you know, 12 feet in front of where you're hanging out with your friends and you hit and then you come back and sit down.
Right.
And
so it's
drink
like,
and eat and watch the game.
It's like having the darts board, but.
Yes. Right. So it can distract you.
I was up on 11 today. Do you know that we have, like, I had no idea. We have, like, a ping pong table.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no idea.
Indoor shuffle. Are you talking about over there on the other side?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
No, not over there. Straight upstairs.
Straight upstairs.
Yeah, there's a hammock, a papa shop.
Yes, there's a hammock.
A bar.
Where?
Outside of Jimmy's office on 11.
I don't even know where that is.
There's a bar. It's stocked. I had no idea.
I will say that we also had a bar at WGN, like on the like in the station. We had a tiki bar. That's a very Jimmy DeCastro kind of thing.
It was.
We used to play bocce ball down the hallways.
Well, I was talking with Jimmy and Mitch today, and they were like, "You know, have you been up here?" And I was like, "No, I didn't. I feel so stupid that this has been up there. I love playing ping pong, but I do feel like it could be." I said today, I said to Mitch, I said, Herbie and I should have show meetings up here.
I'm more excited about the hammock. I didn't know that was up there.
I'm not kidding. There's a fully stocked bar up there. Like, they were laughing and they were like, Lee, here's some Jack Daniels. I was like, what is happening here? There's a beer tub up there.
Yeah, that sounds right. That was also my experience at other places with Jimmy DeCastro.
Who knew? Maybe I'll start hanging out here more.
Hey, I came over here 4 hours early because the hotel I'm staying in is so freaking scary.
I hate that it's scary.
It's really scary.
Why is it scary?
There's no front desk.
Okay, that's not good.
No,
are you at a hostel?
No, what is that? It's like I don't want to give too much away about it because I don't want murderers to know where I'm staying. It's sort of like an executive. Basically, it's a bunch of condos that they're renting out to people for long term.
Gotcha.
I'm only there for one night, but like, there's no deadbolt on the door. There's no chain. Like, the bathroom is like super creepy. It's down a long, dark hallway. There's no one there. I mean, it's like it's an apartment. I mean, there are people live there, but there's no, like, if someone's trying to kill me, I don't know where to go for help.
I had an Airbnb situation at spring training. Where I was like, yeah. The place was great. Like, the hosts were incredible. They gave me a bottle of wine, but then when they left, I was like, oh, okay, so there's a back door here, and there's no... It's a very Chicago thing. I was sitting there, where's the storm door? And there's no storm door. And I'm like, okay. I said, let's start looking for weapons here. Let's start. What can I use in case it all jumps off tonight?
The only piece of art in this place is like an Andy Warhol, Marilyn Monroe on this enormous wall, and it's like way too small for the wall, the picture. So it just looks creepy. And then, like when I went in to get the key to this, it's just like a person sitting behind a card table in an empty office.
Oh
it's
no!
It's just real sketchy.
Okay, well, that sounds awful.
So if I don't come to work on Friday, send out the, you know, I don't know who you send out.
Well.
Send somebody.
Send out the Basset Hounds.
Send Tony Gill. He'll come.
Yeah, Tony will come and help you. He'll try to figure out what happened. He'll be kicking down doors. Where's Julie?
He would not. He would just walk in and go, oh, well, okay. And then he'd walk back out. Come in. Julie's dead.
In my mind, I really like the idea of Tony as Liam Neeson in Taken now.
You know Tony's going to go see A Star Is Born for me.
Really?
Yes.
He's going to give a review?
Yes. I'm paying for Tony to go see A Star Is Born and review.
Get out of here.
Because I like the idea of him seeing the least targeted movie towards him ever to have existed.
That's fair. That's completely fair. But I also want him, like, I don't want anything to happen to you, Jules. But I'm saying, if we were to make this a movie and he's the Liam Neeson character, it would be tremendous. Tony would be like, I got a set of skills.
I just can't see him getting that, like, worked up over anything.
But that's the thing. He probably wouldn't like, get worked up, you know, but he would come find you.
I got a set of skills.
Don't mess with me.
I got a set of skills.
I got a set of skills. What are you going to do on the show tonight?
We're going to talk Bears with Mark Grody. We're going to listen to some of Joe Madden's audio today, which I have, or not Joe Madden's, but Joe Madden's agent's audio.
It was the one thing that I didn't get to today, and I knew that you were going
to
be ready for it.
Oh, I have lots of things to say. And then coming up at 11 o'clock, Andy Schwartz is going to be here. He wrote a piece at Deadspin called The NCAA is Gaslighting You. And he's one of the guys trying to start a new league for college players in the HBCUs.
Okay.
Where they can get paid, they can get endorsements. Basically, the HBCUs tell the NCAA where to go.
To go scratch.
Yep.
Okay, I like it.
Thank you.
Julie, it's good to see you as always. I look forward to you being alive.
Thank you.
So, good luck with that.
Just sleep here tonight.
Well, we got the hammock and the ping pong table.
That's true. Man.
You just come hang out
check
here.
Check out the hammock.
That would be hysterical if you were just like, oh, hey, Jimmy.
Get into the bar in the hammock with a bottle of Jack Daniels.
just sleeping with the Jack Daniels clutched. It's been a rough night. Julie DeCaro is coming up next. She's going to be on the microphone from now until midnight. Show her the same love you showed me. Thanks to Herb Lawrence. Thanks to Mike Chen. Thanks to our guest tonight, Scoop B. Will Perdue was on the show. It was a really, really strong show. I'll be back tomorrow before the Bulls kick off the season. See you at 6 tomorrow night here on The Score.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.